where it was fully banned after being legal for decades or even for a short amount of time, that was at any point an essential form of healthcare?
I think I lost the last part of the question.
So I was just asking, has there been any other type of healthcare service that was banned the way that abortion is being banned throughout the country?
I'm trying to think of that. I don't think I have an answer to that.
No problem. I just thought I would ask. But yeah, I feel like we covered a lot, and I really appreciate everything that you've mentioned. And I definitely feel like there are moments that you offered some really good bits of hope for folks who are wanting to keep abortion legal in this country and in their own states. Is there anything that you would offer in terms of resources for people to better educate themselves or to get their questions asked or answered, rather, like any online resources or books or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think right now in this moment, I think it's really important to be supporting abortion funds. Abortion funds are individuals, folks, organizations that are helping other people access the care they need. So it might be providing the funds to pay for an abortion. It might be helping people travel out of state. It might be helping them logistically arrange for travel out of state or pay for childcare. But really digging in and supporting abortion funds right now, I think is critical. I think that when people, particularly in Florida, but when people need an abortion after 15 weeks, there's a reason, right? There's a reason why they need it. Maybe there is a fetal diagnosis that they have just recently discovered that the doctors didn't know about. Maybe they were unaware that they were pregnant. Maybe they've been trying to get doctor's appointments for weeks and haven't been able to. Maybe they couldn't get the money they needed to, they couldn't scrounge up the money they needed to be able to pay for abortion in time. These are real desperate circumstances for individuals, and we need to make sure that individuals have the access that they need to get the health care that they need.
This is Claire Rosciotto with KBFM, and you're listening to Row on the Rocks, a limited series podcast about what abortion access looked like in America while Roe was still the law of the land. Music in this episode is Ragtime by Peerless, courtesy of Epidemic Sound. Tune in next Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear more.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Hey everybody, thank you for tuning in to Coast Range Radio, a radio program of the Coast Range Association. My name is Andrew, and we'd love to hear from those folks listening out there. Drop us a line or an email at andrew@coastrange.org, and we'll get back to you and really appreciate y'all listening. If you're listening in on your local community radio station, thanks for supporting those stations. They're valuable resources for communities across Western Oregon. Please support your local community station. So today we're talking about forests and water, and I'm excited to have Sam Kropp back in the co-host chair. And Sam is also very knowledgeable about this subject. She's the coalition coordinator for the Forest Waters Coalition. And we have Betsy Herbert, who's a Forest Waters researcher active with the North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection. Hey, Sam.
Hey, great to be here.
Nice. Well, if you wouldn't mind introducing Betsy, and we can get talking about this really important topic, forests and water, and how it's impacting people across Oregon.
Yeah, I'd love to just jump in. I'm super excited to have Betsy on this program today. Dr. Betsy Herbert is an environmental scientist and a published author with expertise in forest management for drinking water protection. She's also a volunteer with the North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection. And I have the pleasure of working alongside her in our mutual efforts to advance protections for forested waterways and reform Oregon's very outdated logging laws. Betsy has been a huge help in supporting the Forest Waters Watch community, which is a growing network of Oregonians who are impacted by private industrial logging and who want to stay in the know about the logging and chemical sprays that are happening in their backyards. So we've been working together to build resources and to grow this network. So if you're an Oregonian who's impacted by private industrial forestry, please do connect with us. You can connect with me at sam@forestwaters.org, and we'd love to loop you into this beautiful growing community. And so with that, I think we can jump right in. Betsy, it's so wonderful to have you here. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
Awesome. So why don't we just get started by asking you a little bit about your background? How did you get into Forest Waters work in the first place?
Well, you know, like most people who are find themselves active in protecting forests, my involvement started with my own personal experience. And I've lived most of my life in the Coast Redwood Country in the Santa Cruz Mountains down in Central California. And then back in the 1980s, my husband and I were living our dream. We had a geodesic dome up there in the Santa Cruz Mountains, 14 acres of redwoods, and we were both working in high tech in Silicon Valley. This sounded like kind of a dream, it was. And then in the early 90s, what happened was the price of timber went way up, the price of lumber went way up. And so there was a new state rule they put in effect in California that allowed people who lived in residential areas to go out and start cutting down 3 acres of redwoods without having any kind of a review process at all. They could just go and file a form and then fire up the chainsaws. So in our neighborhood, about half the people thought that was a great idea and started logging, and the other half of us thought it was a terrible idea. We all shared a private road up in the mountains, 3 miles long, steep and treacherous road. And we had just paved the road, and it cost a lot of money to do that. And as the trees started dropping and these big logging trucks started heading down our private road, the pavement started to break up and we started to have parts of the road slip out. And I was very dismayed to find out that really the neighbors didn't have any recourse about how those who caused the road damage would not be held accountable. So I think it was the injustice of the situation that got me to start digging into the state laws that regulated logging. And up until that point, I was pretty clueless about how state forests were managed at all. But as I dug into it, I found that the public really had very little power when it came to scaling back logging operations that caused people problems. So I joined a local forest protection group, and I started meeting people from all around Santa Cruz County and the state of California who were facing all kinds of issues about logging: noise, dust, road issues, and concerns about wildlife habitat being ruined. And then one day a man called me to tell me about a proposed logging by the city of Watsonville in their own watershed that supplied the city with water. Now, Watsonville is about 20 miles south of Santa Cruz, and they're known as the strawberry capital of California. But they get their water from the mountain streams. In the city of Watsonville owned about 200 acres and these beautiful old redwood trees growing there. And they had one time, it was kind of a curious case because the city of Watsonville had previously opposed logging in that watershed from other timberland owners because of the effects that the logging would have on their water supply. But then once the city council of Watsonville realized how much money they could make by felling those 100-year-old redwood trees on their land, then they suddenly decided that the impacts on the water supply weren't really that bad. So I found that to be kind of indicative of some of the problems that go along with logging and water.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you brought that experience up here to Oregon?
Yeah. Well, you know, I continued looking into the impacts of commercial logging on community water supplies and led an effort to stop the city of Watsonville from logging their watershed. But we lost that legal battle. At the same time, we raised the public's understanding of what was going on with how important it was to protect their watersheds for the drinking water. And we managed to stop the city of Santa Cruz logging after they commissioned a report that showed that it was the logging roads in their forested watershed that they put in themselves because they were logging their city's watershed. It was those same logging roads that were bleeding sediment into the reservoir and filling it up with silt. So it was all of these things put together that started me on this path towards trying to figure out what it was that you could do to manage a watershed for drinking water rather than maximizing timber harvest. And so I enrolled in a PhD program at UC Santa Cruz to carry on this work, and I studied hydrology, biology, environmental policy, and economics. And that my dissertation took me all the way up to the north coast of California, Oregon, and Washington to study logging in drinking water watersheds. And what I found is that most water utilities don't own much land in the watersheds that supply their drinking water. And most of them have rights to water that flows from either private or state-managed timberland. And so, of course, most water utilities are worried about how those, you know, they don't have any control over how those watersheds are managed. So, you know, I moved to Oregon about 4 years ago after I had published my dissertation research results. And I started looking into water issues here, and that's how I hooked up with Sam here with the Forest Waters Coalition, because that's exactly what they were doing, was looking at forest management and its impacts on drinking water.
So it seemed like a perfect connection for your research and then bringing that here.
Definitely was.
So what's happening here in Western Oregon with the coastal communities, also just communities all over with forests, private forests, and their drinking water?
Well, you know, like I was saying, California has some of the same issues, and so does Washington. I studied all of those states. And a lot of it relates to the forest management, because that's where most of the land in those watersheds is either owned by state forest lands or private timberlands. And it's becoming urgent here in Oregon, especially partly because of climate change. Climate change is exacerbating the problems that we already have. And the problems that we already have accumulated from decades of damage that's occurred to the forests that are supplying our drinking water. The water is becoming more polluted, and it's becoming more expensive to treat. And why is it becoming more polluted? Because all of those clear cuts, massive clear cuts, are eroding the soil, which is washing down and coming down right into the treatment plants. So what happens is, once that water becomes too polluted, those treatment plants can't handle treating the water, and they have to shut down the intake. And sometimes they don't shut it down soon enough, and that polluted water gets in there, and you end up with some pretty bad disinfectant byproducts. That happens when polluted water interacts with chlorine and other chemicals they use to disinfect the water. So these issues are causing a lot of small drinking watersheds, drinking community water supplies, don't have the money to build big, sophisticated treatment plants. What they would really like to have is a fully functioning forest, because it's a natural water filtration system and it's a natural water storage system. But you won't end up with that if you can continue to maximize timber production in those watersheds. You're just working at odds with each other if you try to manage for both maximum timber and to protect drinking water.
And I know that the work that you're doing in North Coast communities has been focused a lot on specific communities on the coast of Oregon. And I think what you're saying is so important, and maybe we can dig a little bit deeper into a case study of some of these impacts of logging on community drinking water supplies. I know that you are working really hard on this incredible timeline, sort of documenting the history of Rockaway Beach, which I think is probably the saddest and most indicting of the logging industry poster child of just how bad this can be. And so I'm wondering, can you give us sort of a flyover of that timeline, the history of industrial logging in Rockaway Beach and the Jetty Creek specifically drinking water supply, and how the community and NCCWP have engaged along the way?
Sure, yeah. I met Nancy Webster, who is the founder of North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection, NCCWP. I met her through the Forest Waters Coalition. And I then met a lot of the other people that are affiliated with that group. Rockaway Beach is a town of about 2,600 people on the north coast of Oregon. And its surface water comes, its primary source of water is Jetty Creek. And the timber company, two timber companies own the entire watershed. So it's kind of a case study in what can go wrong when you have weak logging laws and you have a government agencies that will not actually do their jobs to protect drinking water. Nancy and her group had been collecting all kinds of information, documenting what was going on, all the clear cuts, all the pesticide spraying, all the attempts to stop these things, writing letters, having community meetings, talking to legislators, meeting with agency personnel, and all to no avail. Nothing seemed to help. The logging continued. They had more water quality alerts than any other water system on the coast of Oregon because of the polluted water. And over 95% of that watershed was logged in 20 years. So it was hard to, you know, they've raised these issues over a long period of time. And I figured when I started working with them that we needed to get a timeline together so we could really present the big picture all in one kind of visually compelling way where you can actually see what's happening. You know, so we made this timeline and it's full of aerial photographs. It's completely documented. It shows all of the state reports that show the water quality problems. We have records as far as we could get, because one problem is that the Oregon Department of Forestry doesn't retain any of their records of forest operations for more than 7 years. So unless you save those records yourself, there's no way to get a record of what's happened. So we've used a lot of aerial photographs to show the demise of this forest that started out in 1994 is really pretty well intact. And then, you know, by 2021, it was 95% logged, clear cut. So it tells a very compelling story because you can see it all at once. And I think the most important part of the story is it's the damage that was caused to the streams, both in terms of quality and quantity, decreasing quantity because of the clear cutting, it was the community that had to pay for the damage. The community is the one that had to pay for a new water treatment plant at a cost of more than $2.5 million. Why did they have to pay for it when it was the timber companies that caused the damage? You know, that's that, once again, there's that old injustice thing that comes up that just really, you know, that kind of drives my my acts in terms of trying to protect drinking water. It's just not, it's not fair that people should have to absorb the cost of this damage while the timber companies just make off with the spoils. So yeah, that's pretty much the story that the timeline tells. And it's a story of government failure to address these very real problems.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to, and the, just putting in your expertise and the hard work to document that. And yeah, what, they only keep the records for 7 years and then it's up to citizens to maintain that. That's just, it's ridiculous. And I think with, you know, you doing all this work and, you know, working both on the research side and the policy side, we'd like to hear, you know, what do you think are some key changes that are needed right now? Where can, you know, we can address this failing of governance? Where can we address this horrible impact to these communities? What can what are your recommendations?
Well, how much time do you have?
Well, we have about 10 minutes left, and so maybe just the overview, and then we can, get really excited and pumped on this, they can reach out to Sam at forestwaters.org, and we can continue the conversation with folks. But yeah, maybe just the overview.
Sure. Well, you know, the Gwich'in people have a saying that that I find especially relevant to this whole area. And that is, if you take care of the land will take care of you. And as the timeline shows that, you know, guess what? The Oregon Department of Forestry is not taking care of the land. So what I suggest, I have 9 different things that I would change. Some of them would be pretty easy in terms of, you know, if you could get the political will to actually do them, it wouldn't be that difficult to make the change. First of all, we need a state permitting process for timber operations. What ODF has now is just a notification system. There's no permit required before logging begins. There's actually a law that would need to be changed, because right now the law prohibits the Board of Forestry from requiring approval of written plans for timber operations. So you could just fix that by getting rid of that law. The permit process has to be put in place so that the public has a right to put in their concerns before these logging operations happen. So that would be the first change. The second change I think we already touched on, and that is that Oregon Department of Forestry needs to keep their records longer. You know, they log, well, you know, 30 to 50 years out before they start logging again. So they really need to retain the records of their forest operations for 30 to 50 years, because the trees are still growing back and it's still really important to know what has been already cut in those watersheds. So that would be the second thing. The third thing is that Oregon Department of Forestry does not track their forest operations by watershed. They're not looking at the watershed scale. And I found this out by requesting all of the timber operations within a particular watershed, and they really couldn't handle that request. So they need to be tracking forest operations by watershed. If they don't do that, they can't assess impacts to water quality or quantity. And if there's no set limits to clear cutting in a watershed, then you end up with something like Jetty Creek becoming 95% logged in 20 years. So that would be the third. The fourth thing would be, let's restore the forest to an average age of 100 years in community drinking watersheds. It's very widely acknowledged that older forests function as natural water treatment systems, both in terms of filtering the water and storing the water and releasing the water. So in the long term, if you let those forests go back to 100 years average age, you're going to save a lot of money in water treatment costs. And then another one is to require science-based no-cut buffer zones around surface water streams, including those headwater streams that supply domestic water.
Yeah, those seasonal streams.
Yes. And then another really big one is ODF needs to start enforcing alternative practices to pesticide use in community drinking watersheds. Because pesticides, besides being a significant threat to public health, it also degrades the natural forest ecosystem, and that leads to water quality and quantity issues as well. So we need to stop that pesticide use in community drinking watersheds. And then another one is we need to put a limit on the road networks in these watersheds. Restrict the road density to a reasonable ratio of 2 miles of road per square mile of watershed. This is a metric that's used by NOAA Fisheries to avoid watershed dysfunction. And then the other thing that's sadly missing is that ODF needs to implement source water quality monitoring within drinking watersheds. Right now, there's no source water quality monitoring at all, and it's really critical to know where impacts are occurring. So those would be some of the things that we could do to really get down to protecting our drinking water.
Wow. Thank you, Betsy. That is a really, really helpful list. And I really hope some legislators are listening right now and taking notes, because you're right. These are things, a lot of them are some low-hanging fruit, but they would create just monumental changes for our drinking watersheds. So thank you for laying that out so clearly for us. And also for talking about the importance of not just water quality, but water quantity, which you named as, you know, the so important, especially in the context of climate change. We have to be thinking not just about the poisons in our water, but also about whether or not our water is going to be available in the future. And so thank you so much for all of your work on this. For our last question, I think I would love to just open it up to, if you have any calls to action to folks who are listening, people who are inspired and want to get involved, who want to be a part of this movement to change our outdated logging laws and protect drinking water, what would you say to those folks?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get involved. One opportunity we have right now is to push ODF in the right direction to protect drinking water on state forest lands. They just added a new goal. It was never there before. And it's protection of drinking water. And they added that goal because so many people raised that issue. So right now they have draft strategies to protect drinking water, and they're seeking public comment on those. Now it has to do with state forest land, but a lot of drinking water is impacted by state forest land and by private forest land. But ODF regulates both. So if they can learn to establish protections on their drinking water for state forest lands, then that's a big motivation to start looking at private forest lands as well.
Awesome. Thank you for that specific action, Betsy. Folks can go to coastrange.org/coastrangeradio to the show notes for this episode, and there you can find a link to comment on the Oregon Department of Forestry's Companion Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan and Implementation Plans Project. I also think if folks, you know, if you have concerns about your living out in Western Oregon and you have concerns about your drinking water, you know, you're going to your public meetings with the water utility and they're talking about impacts to quantity or the quality of water, reach out. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, lots of folks who are dealing with the same issues. And we can help. You know, you can, the Forest Waters Watch, which is a part of the Forest Waters Coalition, can help provide resources, connect you with others who are building these types of kind of community watch groups like North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection. You can reach Sam at forestwaters.org, and I can also help out Andrew at coastrange.org, and we can get people connected to resources and building that grassroots support. Hey, Betsy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on to Coast Range Radio. We really appreciate your important research and your time for educating people on this issue.
Well, thanks to both of you for all your work, and thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam. And yeah, that's all for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Coast Range Radio, a radio program and podcast that holds conversations with inspiring individuals who are dedicated to creating a better world. Coast Range Radio is on all podcasting services. Please leave us a review and subscribe to get the newest episode every 2 weeks. And thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.